Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today as we review Harmony Biosciences' development program for pitolisant in patients with myotonic dystrophy, also known as DM. Our presenters this morning are Dr. Jeffrey Dayno, our Chief Medical Officer, and Kate McCanless, Senior Vice President of Corporate Affairs and Public Policy. As a reminder, we will be making forward-looking statements today, which are based on our current expectations and beliefs. Please refer to the risk factors referenced in our SEC filings for additional details. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to our Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Jeffrey Dayno. Jeff?
Thanks, Lisa. Welcome, everyone. And on behalf of Harmony Biosciences, thank you for joining us this morning, and thanks for your time and interest. I am excited to share with you our lifecycle management strategy for pitolisant, based on its unique mechanism of action and focused on patient populations with evidence of decreased levels of orexin and hypothalamic dysfunction, such as myotonic dystrophy, or DM, and Prader-Willi syndrome, or PWS. This strategy is designed to expand the clinical utility of pitolisant beyond sleep and wakefulness. Next, I'll provide some background on myotonic dystrophy, including the high prevalence and impact of the non-muscular symptoms of excessive daytime sleepiness, or EDS, fatigue, and cognitive dysfunction in these patients, limitations with existing therapies, and the significant unmet medical need for treatments for patients with DM. I'll then ask Kate to provide some insights from the patient community, which validate the need for new treatment options for patients with DM and how our development program is aligned with those needs. Then I will walk you through the scientific rationale for investigating pitolisant in patients with DM and how the non-muscular symptoms of EDS, fatigue, and cognitive dysfunction are mediated through histaminergic circuits in the brain. Lastly, I'll provide an overview of our phase II clinical trial in patients with DM1, which is on track to initiate by the end of this month. So we view pitolisant as a portfolio and a product opportunity, and we are taking a mechanism-based approach to our drug development programs based on the unique mechanism of action of pitolisant. In addition, some of the other factors are because of the role of histamine in normal physiologic functioning and the important role of histamine in disorders of orexin deficiency. In addition, the location of histamine-3 receptors throughout the CNS that you see in this schematic of the brain on the right panel of this slide. In addition, there are limited H3 receptor populations outside the CNS, which account for the favorable tolerability profile of pitolisant. And lastly, the proven clinical efficacy of pitolisant in excessive daytime sleepiness. So based on all these factors, we believe that pitolisant has the potential for multiple additional indications in rare disease patient populations with unmet medical needs. This slide shows the lifecycle management strategy for pitolisant, and this is aimed at evolving beyond sleep and wakefulness. We obviously started with label expansion in narcolepsy, but now the focus is on these new indications based on the histamine-3 receptor mechanism of action and focused on additional rare disease patient populations. The trials are centered around EDS as a primary endpoint and then looking at new clinical endpoints and exploring the function for cognition, behavior, and fatigue. We started with Prader-Willi syndrome, or PWS, and the focus of this call is on myotonic dystrophy. The common thread or the common theme in the disorders that we are investigating is centered around decreased orexin levels and resulting hypothalamic dysfunction. What you see on this slide on the left panel, this is evidence of decreased orexin levels in patients with PWS. So you see the orexin levels along the y-axis, and PWS levels are lower than normal controls. And in this study, it was represented actually by patients with idiopathic hypersomnia, labeled as IHS, because those patients have normal levels of orexin. So lower than a normal population, but not as low, obviously, as in narcolepsy. On the right is the evidence of decreased orexin levels in patients with DM1. And there you see orexin levels in about 150 to 200 range picograms per ml, and lower than normal controls at levels about 3 to 350. The cutoff in this assay of CSF hypocretin is about at 200, under 200 being low and above being in the normal range, and evidence of decreased orexin levels in patients with DM1. So based on this, and there are a couple other studies showing decreased levels in patients with DM1, there's evidence of hypothalamic dysfunction and impaired orexin systems. And in that setting, histamine plays an important role in terms of normalizing, you know, some of these functions. So a little bit of background information on the disorder of myotonic dystrophy. It's a rare neurological and multisystem disease. It was originally named Dystrophia myotonica, which is where it gets its DM acronym from. It's the most common form of adult onset muscular dystrophy. It's a genetic disorder with an autosomal dominant inheritance and with two major types. Type 1 myotonic dystrophy, or DM1, results in a trinucleotide repeat on the Dystrophia myotonica protein kinase gene on chromosome 19. DM2 results in a tetranucleotide repeat on a gene on chromosome 3. So what happens pathophysiologically in these disorders? You have abnormal production of messenger RNA, resulting in abnormal protein synthesis. And these abnormal proteins sort of clump in the cells and in the muscle tissue, build up in the different tissues, in skeletal muscle, cardiac muscle in DM, as well as in the brain, and results in the symptomatology. The epidemiology of myotonic dystrophy, DM1 is much more common than DM2. The prevalence that's been stated in the medical literature has been about 1 in 8,000. However, latest epidemiologic data from a study of newborn screening in the state of New York has shown that the prevalence of the genetic mutation in DM1 is actually 1 in 2,100 births. So this suggests there are approximately 160,000 people in the U.S. that are living with this genetic defect for DM1. The estimated number of patients currently diagnosed is about 40,000. But what this suggests is that there's potential for increased diagnosis with more awareness of the disorder, its impact, and obviously as new treatment options are introduced into the market. The cardinal symptoms of DM are myotonia, which is an inability for muscles to relax, and progressive muscle weakness and wasting. You see some representations of this on this slide. So the picture in the top right of this slide represents sort of a static picture of myotonia, and you see sort of the hands and extended and the inability for the hands to relax. Actually, a diagnostic maneuver for myotonic dystrophy when patients come into your clinic is you shake someone's hand and they're unable to let go, this inability for muscles to relax. And that's sort of a pretty important signal that DM could be the diagnosis. These other pictures show the muscle wasting resulting in muscle weakness. You see it in muscles of the trunk and proximal musculature, as well as in the face, sort of the elongated facial features, droopy eyelids known as ptosis. And you can also get weakness of the tongue muscles, which results in slurred speech called dysarthria. And some of these patients are kind of misunderstood as being sort of, you know, drunk or intoxicated due to the muscle weakness. But the non-muscular symptoms are prominent and have important impact. Excessive daytime sleepiness in approximately 90% of the patients, fatigue in over 90% of patients, and cognitive dysfunction in greater than 60% of patients with DM1. There's other symptom involvement as well, as I mentioned, cardiac involvement, which results in abnormal conduction, GI with motility issues, as well as endocrine dysfunction. There was an important study, the PRISM-1 study, published in the Neurology Journal in 2012. This was the prevalence and impact of symptoms in DM1. Chad Heatwall from Rochester was the lead author. And what it showed, the key findings, it highlighted the high prevalence of the non-muscular symptoms of EDS, fatigue, and cognitive dysfunction in patients with DM1, and actually the impact factor of these symptoms were as high or higher than the muscular symptoms. This is represented on the bar graph on the left of this slide. You see the prevalence and along the x-axis, and then the impact factor, 0 to 4, with 4 being the highest impact. So problems with hands and arms with an impact score of about 2.27 you see there, but fatigue with an impact of 2.49, myotonia at 2.09, but daytime sleepiness with an impact factor of 2.25. So again, the non-muscular symptoms prevalent with high impact and significant sort of burden on these patients. The current treatment options for patients living with DM are limited, and what HCPs do is they turn to kind of the traditional agents for treating EDS, but the evidence is limited, as represented on this slide. There were two small studies, one with modafinil, the panel on the left, and the other with methylphenidate, panel on the right. And the bottom line was that neither of these studies showed any significant improvement on objective measures of sleepiness as measured by the mean sleep latency using the MWT in the modafinil trial and the MSLT in the one with methylphenidate. In addition, on the modafinil trial, none of the secondary endpoints, including the Epworth Sleepiness Scale score, clinician and patient global impressions were positive. And with methylphenidate, actually three of the patients had to discontinue due to adverse events while on methylphenidate in the crossover trial. So bottom line, significant unmet medical need for treatments for patients with DM, with myotonic dystrophy. So I'll now turn it over to Kate for some comments and patient insights from myotonic dystrophy. Kate?
Thank you, Jeff, and thank you all for joining us today. Jeff, as you alluded to just earlier in the presentation, there's now almost a decade's worth of the recognition of these symptomatic patterns in myotonic dystrophy that have a burden on the health quality of the lives of patients, but are often unrecognized or go unreported by these patients to their healthcare providers. And the PRISM study, as you said, really teases this out. The PRISM study and this effort was really the underlying study that began to build the body of evidence that we see that tease out these common elements that were not previously identified. And this research has subsequently informed additional surveys, meetings, conferences, and tools that have been sponsored by the patient advocacy community to begin to memorialize and then promulgate the impact of these symptoms. And this work still continues to this day. As you said, the PRISM study found and multiple subsequent instruments have also found that these symptoms are not commonly reported, but that excessive daytime sleepiness and fatigue have a significant impact on patients' lives. The Christopher Project was one of the first reports to pull all of this information together. And this was a collaborative research project with the national patient organizations, providers, patients, caregivers, and family members across the U.S. and Canada. And the project was designed to understand the needs of these patients and really to focus in on the complementing research that was coming out of the University of Rochester. So in 2014 and then into 2015, there were 450 surveys that were distributed and returned for patients and caregivers with myotonic dystrophy type 1, and over 200,000 data points were collected. The Christopher Project found that over 93% of these myotonic dystrophy type 1 respondents reported that they experienced EDS and that sleep and fatigue issues were very pervasive and presented a significant challenge to their daily lives. And as Dr. Dano also shared, consistent with other patient reports, the use of over 20 different off-label medications for EDS or fatigue were reported with a mixed level of satisfaction, and that mirrors the moderate to low efficacy that we saw in the published medical literature. The full report was summarized and an 80-page report was entered into the literature, and this has been foundational at then driving additional efforts by the advocacy community to further understand the impact of EDS and fatigue specifically. So the Myotonic Dystrophy Foundation, now known as Myotonic, actually hosted the very first patient-focused drug development meeting sponsored by an external organization, an advocacy organization, in 2016. And this was the first time that the FDA sanctioned an externally led PFDD meeting. And it was the first PFDD meeting focused on myotonic dystrophy. It offered patients and caregivers the opportunity to share their perspectives on what their most burdensome symptoms were and what the most prevalent symptoms were in their daily functioning, and share this with the FDA when they were considering what would be meaningful in future therapies. More than 200 community members, industry professionals, academic researchers, and the FDA participated in the meeting. And the Myotonic Dystrophy Foundation submitted a voice of the patient report back to the FDA, representing the responses of 58 of these individuals with myotonic dystrophy type 1. This report was submitted to the FDA in May of 2017 and was intended for inclusion in the benefit risk framework used to later assess potential DM therapies and to ensure that FDA decision makers understood the impact of these other symptoms on the burden of these patients' daily lives. The most important factors here that they highlighted was that a new DM treatment should reduce fatigue, improve waking and stamina, and improve their sleep issues. The Myotonic Dystrophy Foundation has also continued its important patient advocacy-focused work, and they conduct patient and caregiver sessions at each of their annual events, and they explore a lot of facets of the disease burden and what patients want most out of new therapies. In 2017, they conducted one of these sessions. It was titled Bringing the Patient Voice to CNS Targeting Drug Development in Myotonic Dystrophy. And this particular session included more than 350 members of the myotonic dystrophy community. During this session, patients and caregivers frequently described their CNS symptoms and the impact they had on the quality of life, including excessive daytime sleepiness and fatigue. This all alludes with the earlier publications and research tools that we mentioned, most prominently highlighting these key non-muscular symptoms. This particular session was later published in the Journal of Therapeutic Innovation and Regulatory Science in 2020. And so recognizing this body of patient and caregiver reported impact on daytime sleepiness and fatigue, Harmony was honored later to invite 6 patients and caregivers with myotonic dystrophy to participate with us in a 2-day patient advocacy board earlier this spring, designed to provide them with an opportunity to share more about their specific daily experiences living with myotonic dystrophy and their families, and to discuss the burden these often unreported symptoms have on their daily lives that they feel are not well managed with the available treatment options currently. The patients confirmed to us that while the other symptoms of their disease were important, they were not as disruptive to their daily lives as the sleepiness and these other CNS symptoms. The consensus broadly among these advisors was that there is a lot of interest in the patient community on addressing these non-muscular CNS-related symptoms that have such a high burden on their ability to function daily. So you see a lot of key themes emerge when you're looking at both the patient-reported outcomes and comparing it then to the medical literature. You see some of the quotes highlighted from each report here on this particular slide, and there are several symptomatic themes that just aren't as inquired about, but they clearly have a profound impact on the lives of patients and caregivers, and they are seen very clearly through these reports and survey tools. You'll see the Christopher Project reported that DM1 respondents report more sleepiness and more impact from fatigue and have a harder time staying alert. The Myotonic Conference participant quoted here said that more than anything, I want to recapture the joy of life that can be lost to a neuromuscular disease that requires most of my energy to get through the day, leaving little in reserve for the things that really matter. a patient that participated in the PFDD meeting told the FDA that, "I hope, beg, and pray for a drug or therapy that will bring all of the brain-related symptoms that DM1 patients are experiencing." And then quite profoundly, one of the advisors that participated with Harmony this spring summed up his needs by saying, "If I can go to a movie in a wheelchair, that's okay for me, as long as I'm able to stay awake for the whole movie." So based on this feedback, these surveys, these meetings, the reports, and our own discussions with patients and advocacy groups, we believe that there is a well-documented and growing body of evidence with patients and caregivers that the burden of EDS and fatigue and the decline in cognition results in a strong desire by this particular community to address these needs through new treatments and therapies. And Harmony is very excited at the possibility of contributing positively to these patients' lives. Jeff, I'll hand it back to you.
Thanks, Kate, for sharing sort of the important sort of voice of the patient. Obviously, any disorders, rare diseases and the important input. So let's shift gears. I want to shift gears and focus on pitolisant now, a first-in-class molecule with a novel mechanism of action. And pitolisant is a histamine-3 receptor antagonist inverse agonist that increases histaminergic transmission in the brain. And histamine is a major wake-promoting neurotransmitter, also helps to stabilize states of sleep and wakefulness. It also activates other wake-promoting neurotransmitters, but does so in a selective fashion. Importantly, it does not increase dopamine in the nucleus accumbens, the rewarding center of the brain, which is consistent with its lack of abuse potential, and obviously WAKIX having been approved as a non-scheduled treatment for narcolepsy. The diagram on the bottom half of this slide, this circuit diagram that you see, we refer to as the three H's, histamine and hypocretin or orexin in the hypothalamus. And what you see here is the important sort of parallel circuitry between hypocretin, orexin, and histamine working to activate the cerebral cortex, also activate wake-promoting neurons, and inhibit both REM and non-REM sleep neurons. So in the setting of orexin deficiency, you can see where histamine becomes a major player with regards to generating wakefulness and stabilizing states of sleep and wakefulness, as well as other functions mediated through histamine. If we drill a little deeper into the mechanism of action of pitolisant, we see it shown schematically on this slide. So step one, pitolisant in the blue there binds to the presynaptic histamine 3 autoreceptor, blocking histamine from binding, releasing the brake, and resulting in increased release of histamine from the presynaptic receptor. That's the antagonist property of pitolisant. The inverse agonist property is shown in step two, which upregulates the synthesis of histamine in the presynaptic neuron and more available for release. Step three is increased histamine in the synapse available to bind at the postsynaptic histamine 1 receptor, and you see that in step three. That activates the postsynaptic histamine receptor and then driving increased wakefulness, as well as activating other neurotransmitters downstream. Just as an aside, on step three there, the reason why the early generation antihistamines were, are sedating is because they are blocking that postsynaptic H1 receptor and sort of getting in the way, if you will, of the wakefulness, and that is the reason that those agents have sedating properties. So the scientific rationale for pitolisant in patients with DM is sort of summarized on this slide. First, EDS and fatigue are the most common non-muscular symptoms in patients with DM1. I've shown you evidence of decreased levels of orexin that have been found in some patients with myotonic dystrophy and the important role of histamine in disorders of orexin deficiency. Pitolisant increases histamine levels in the brain. It's demonstrated efficacy in improving EDS. And histamine is also a main neurotransmitter mediating other functions, including fatigue and cognitive functions. Histamine also stimulates other key neurotransmitters, namely acetylcholine and the cholinergic system, which is important in cognitive function. Some studies have suggested the role of histamine and benefit of pitolisin with regards to cognition and attentional mechanisms. And then, you know, ultimately, there's a significant unmet medical need for new treatments in patients with myotonic dystrophy. So a little update on our phase two clinical trial of pitolisin in patients with DM1. This is a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled parallel group study. We are targeting about 135 patients, adults ages 18 to 65. There are 20 clinical trial sites in various stages of activation as we're gearing up to initiate the trial. And there's a screening period up to 28 days. Then patients will be randomized to either low-dose pitolisin, high-dose pitolisin, or placebo, titrated over a three-week period, and then stable dosing for 8 weeks. Patients who complete the trial will have the option to go into the open-label, long-term open-label extension phase. The primary objective is to evaluate the safety and efficacy of pitolisin compared with placebo in treating EDS in patients with DM1. And secondary objectives are to assess the impact of pitolisin on fatigue, cognitive function, overall burden of illness by patient reports, physician assessment of disease severity, and then long-term safety of effectiveness of pitolisin during the open-label extension. So lastly, a few concluding remarks. As I mentioned, we're taking a mechanism-based approach to our life cycle management and development programs with pitolisin based on its unique mechanism of action and our focus on rare diseases that have evidence of decreased orexin levels, such as myotonic dystrophy and Prader-Willi syndrome. There's strong scientific rationale for the potential utility of pitolisin in patients with DM, specifically because EDS, fatigue, and cognitive function are mediated through histaminergic circuits, as well as other neurotransmitters that are stimulated by histamine and controlled by histamine 3 receptors. We see DM1 representing a potential large market opportunity for pitolisin. Again, about 160,000 people living in the U.S. with a genetic defect. These symptoms are very common with a high impact compared to the muscular symptoms. And ultimately, you know, there are no FDA-approved treatments. And while other disease-modifying agents are in early stages of development, there's a significant unmet medical need to manage the symptomatology of patients living with DM1. We are on track to initiate our phase two trial by the end of the month, and stay tuned for more news on that coming. So again, thank you for your attention, and again, thanks very much for your interest in Harmony Biosciences.